The European Cup had started in 1956, and no British team had even reached the final until an unfancied Celtic team, all born within 30 miles of Glasgow, arrived in Lisbon on a May evening in 1967.
Now sitting with me is Archie McPherson, who saw the Celtic team when they arrived just before they locked themselves in their dressing room. How were they looking, Archie?
Looking extremely confident, Ken, and as bonus, but this is nothing, absolutely nothing to the Celtic players. When I spoke to them in their luxurious hotel, when I spoke to manager Jock Steen and the players, they looked as if they could have played this game for nothing with the great determination that they've shown throughout this season. But of course, this is what they've done. They play as if they're playing for themselves, for the manager, and for these supporters that have come all these thousands of miles to see them. Well, as a Glasgow man, as a Scottish man, I must take them to win this game because I've seen them playing so well, not only in the Scottish League, but again, some of the best in Europe. Of course, there's Portugal and France, two each, West Germany and Yugoslavia, and here comes the Mitchell Hansen, the referee is the Gerd Genscher of West Germany. Celtic now on the right, led by Billy McNeil. Celtic in their world-famous green and white hoop shirt, with no numbers on their back, only on their white shorts, into Milan in their black and blue striped shirt, black shorts.
On the 25th of May, Top of the Pops was on. Dave D and Dozy Beak, Mick and Tish, Dusty Springfield, Procol Harum, and the Supremes were all on Top of the Pops, as were the Tremolos, who were number one at the time. The top 10 in that week were Something Stupid by Nancy and Frank Sinatra, The Wind Cries Mary by Jimi Hendrix, The Boat That I Row by Lulu, Seven Drunken Nights by The Dubliners, Pictures of Lily by The Who, Puppet on a String by Sandy Shaw, Then a Kiss Her by The Beach Boys, Dedicated to One I Love by The Mamas and the Papas, Waterloo Sunset, The Kinks, Love Song to London, and The Tremolos with Silence Was Golden. That was the top 10 in the singles charts. Top 10 in the albums charts, which not quite as trendy as people give the 60s credit for. You, Cat Stevens at number 10. Number 9 in the albums charts was Harry Secombe's Personal Choice. Number 8 was the original London cast of Fiddler on the Roof. Number 7 was James Last. Number 6 was The Dubliners. But they must have been on the TV at the time, because number 5 in the charts was The Monkees by The Monkees. Number 4 was Best of the Beach Boys. Number 3, Tom Jones, The Green Green Grass of Home. Number 2 was the original soundtrack to The Sound of Music. And number 1, the reason why I say they must have been on TV at the time, was More of the Monkees by The Monkees. At the pictures, you'd have probably gone and seen Casino Royale in the recent weeks, and you'd be just about to go and see the other Bond film that was out at the time, You Only Live Twice. That was the music, that was the films, but more importantly, on the football pitch, you had Scotland against England at Wembley, is very famous. You had another Glasgow team who got beaten in a forthcoming European final, but most importantly of all, you had Glasgow Celtic becoming not just the first Scottish team or the first British team, but the first non-Latin team to lift the European Cup. So it's the 50th anniversary of Lisbon, and we need to do a podcast for it. Now, I'm lucky enough, I was actually thinking, I nearly asked this question of Brendan Rodgers after the game on Saturday. I nearly asked Brendan Rodgers, I nearly said, in my lifetime, Celtic have made two European finals. Does he think, I've got a 7-year-old, does he think in my 7-year-old's lifetime that he'll get to see two European finals? But I didn't. But I don't remember the European final that matters, the one we won. So I needed to find a member of our team who does remember it. So Lackey Moore steps forward as a member of our team who can recall the European Cup final of 67. So, Lackey, to age yourself, what age were you in 1967?
I was 19.
So, where will we start? Let's start Let's start the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
How are things going at the start of the season?
That season?
Mm-hmm.
I think you can only look at that season if you go back two seasons to when Steen came.
Okay, go back two seasons. Go back 65 to when Steen arrives.
Well, I was looking at a thing on Twitter a couple of weeks ago about what was your favourite Celtic goal. And the one that, for me, stood out as the most important goal was Billy McNeil's header against Inferno when he scored the winner. Because they hadn't won a trophy for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Steen had just come in. And it was so important. It is, I think it's the only time I've ever cried at a football match. At the end of the game, the emotion all around was astonishing. It was a brilliant game. The Inferno were a terrific team. And Celtic were behind twice and they came back to win. And you knew, I'm not just making this up, you knew the world had changed.
More emotional than Van Hooijdonk's goal against Airdrie?
Yes. Oh.
More emotional than Brakback's goal against St Johnson?
Yes. It occurred to me, I said to Irene today that when I was watching the celebrations at the weekend and thinking of the celebrations last year and other years, none of them compared to the celebrations when Harold scored, because the emotion that day was utterly raw.
Yeah.
Because we were on the edge of our seat till he scored. But having gone for so long, I mean, it was 1957 when they won the League Cup, the 7-1 game. And I think they won one Glasgow Cup in between times. I think it was the Glasgow Cup, sort of beating Thurlanna 3-2. But they'd been in several finals and lost them. And it was just, you knew there was some. The semi-final against Motherwell was brilliant. They played brilliantly to beat Motherwell in a replay. Joe McBride scored twice for Motherwell in the first game. Mm-hmm. But the replay, they played brilliantly. And you thought, there's something different now. And then when they won that cup final, you knew right away things were going to get better. Of course, they won the league the next year, won the League Cup, they lost to Rangers in a replay of the Scottish Cup final in a match where Jimmy Johnson said it should have been 10-1. And he was right, because they battered them that night and Kai Johansson scored. And they lost controversially to Liverpool in the semi-final of the European Cup Winners' Cup. And that would have been a cup final, you know, if they get through to that. But I went down to college
mm-hmm.
that year. So that whole year I was living in Manchester and I was coming up and down for the odd game. I remember they played Manchester United at the beginning of the season. Law, Best, Charlton, Pat Crerand, the whole panoply of superstars, and Celtic thrashed them. Comprehensively thrashed them. 4-1. And this is the truth, Harry. I went to college and in the hostel I shared a room with a guy and I made a big banner and I put it up on the wall and I said, this is September.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, Celtic Football Club, Champions of Europe, 1967. Honest to God, that's the truth. And I popped up and down for odd games during the season. I remember one game against the Hibs where I think they won 5-3. It was an awesome game. Two great teams battling it out. And there were other games that they beat the Inferno 5-4, having been behind two goals behind three times in the game. And you just knew that things had changed. They beat the Rangers in the League Cup final. That was a closer game than many expected, but a brilliant goal from Lennox. Put them away. And then they were never far in front in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was always close, nip and tuck, right today, because Rangers had a very good team at the time. But when they got to the European Cup final, it was interesting, the night they played Vojvodina,
mm-hmm.
when they won 2-1, I could not get the score. That shows you the difference between then and now.
Yeah.
We were in a hostel in Manchester. Celtic were playing at home in the quarter-final of the European Cup. And 10:30 at night, I couldn't get the score. So I phoned the Herald news desk, and the guy said they won 2-0. Now, that's unbelievable, you know?
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I was listening to a preview of
But those were the days when people didn't have phones and you'd queue at a phone box to have a pre-arranged time to phone somebody.
Exactly. But you would have thought it would have been in the BBC News.
Yep.
It was the quarter-final of the European Cup. It wasn't a Celtic or Broth.
Yeah.
You really did think it would get to the news. I was going mental trying to find the score out. But I was interested tonight, or yesterday, I was listening to a preview of tomorrow night's BBC programme. And curious, it was John Gregg was talking. Did you hear the clip?
No, I didn't.
He was talking, he said that he and Ronnie Simpson were great friends. They travelled through in the train from Edinburgh every day to training.
Mm-hmm.
And they both played for Scotland against England at Wembley, of course, when Scotland won 3-2. So he said they were sitting at one side of the table and the English team were at the other table. And then Bobby Moore came over to congratulate them and said, "Oh, you know, well played, lads. You were looking forward to your holidays." And John Gregg said, "No." And he says, "Oh, you're not going away." And he said, "He's playing in the European Cup final. And I'm playing in the Cup Winners' Cup final." And he says Bobby Moore was really quite embarrassed that he hadn't really realised,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's two Scottish teams were in these major finals.
Well,
so that was like those days, you couldn't get the news.
Well, one of the things I was going to ask about that was, you know, was European football as important then?
I think it was. I remember it, you know, growing up and watching top English teams. I remember watching Rangers getting gubbed regularly. I remember top English teams being on the television. Tottenham Hotspur and Benfica, and Tottenham Hotspur came to Ibrox and beat them. Real Madrid beat them at Ibrox, because Eintracht Frankfurt thrashed them. I remember the Celtic playing in Europe against Valencia and Barcelona, teams like that. I remember the year before Steen came, when they lost to MTK Budapest, having gone to Budapest with a 3-goal lead in the semi-final of the Cup Winners' Cup. And legend has it that Bob Kelly told them to attack, and they lost 4-0. Actually, I was at a Celtic Supporters Club meeting that night in St Bartholomew's School in Castlemill, and we were listening to it in the radio, and it was just getting grim. By the minute, really was awful. So there were so many years of disappointment leading up to that season, and all of a sudden, a wee bit like has been this season. I know you were aboard right from the beginning, full of hope, and I had that sense of hope that season. And when they got to the final, I went home. Although I was in Manchester, I went home for the game to see it in the TV at home rather than watch it with a lot of strangers in the climate. But I remember that there was a guy at the college. He is now a Monsignor of the Roman Church. I won't embarrass him by mentioning his name. And his parents got him a ticket for Lisbon and offered to pay his fare. And he didn't go. And I remember saying at the time, "You will go to hell for that."
Why didn't he go?
Hell knows. Exactly. Hell knows. He didn't go.
At one point, you know how, like, in the Seville season, it was, for me, it was round about the quarterfinals that you suddenly think, we could do this. We can get to the final. A couple of wins and draws, and we're there. At what point did you start to think, we can get to this European Cup final here?
Well, as I say, I honestly always thought that they were good enough to win it. But it was when they beat Vojvodina, because they were a good side, and they lost the away leg, and it was really nail-biting stuff right to the end, as we became aware afterwards, that, again, McNeil scored with the header. Maybe if I'd been there that night, that would have been the seminal goal, of my life. But they were a great team. They really were a great team.
So you came home. So what day of the week did you come home?
I came home. I'm in the Glom the Tuesday.
Right.
I watched it in my brother's house. I remember when we equalised, we scared the life out of the Wayne. She was asleep. All of a sudden she started screaming because we were jumping about like dafties.
The team going into you're quite happy with the team because obviously McBride had been injured and Chalmers was in.
He was out for a while.
Yeah.
Stevie Chalmers is a terrific player. Joe McBride is my favourite forward. I thought he was a brilliant clinical finisher. I think I wrote articles about him on the OD Times website. He just was the most economical player. He was a bit in some ways like Sutton in that if you got a chance, he scored.
Mm-hmm.
You don't remember McBride missing many chances. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
I remember before he signed for Celtic, we were at Shawfield Sports. Remember, they used to have sports. That'd be before your time. The Ibrox Sports and the Shawfield Sports and the Falkirk Sports. I remember Pat Creran being ordered off at the Falkirk Sports. And that was yet another black mark against him in Kelly's eyes to get him out. That he couldn't even behave himself at a five-a-side tournament.
Right.
But the Shawfield Sports, Celtic were playing Motherwell. And Joe McBride was playing for Motherwell. And we were sitting beside this woman. We were just boys at the time, and was sitting beside this woman in the crowd. Turned out it was Joe McBride's wife.
Right.
She had the Wayne's film, so Joe must have been there as a baby. You know, the one who later played for Celtic.
Uh-huh.
And she was getting on sweeties. But we were supporting Celtic, obviously. But when Joe McBride scored the two goals against Celtic in the semi-final of the Scottish Cup in the 64-5 season, he was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, if Motherwell were going to win, it was because Joe McBride was playing. So when they signed him at the end of that season, you really knew there was just a barrelload of goals coming. He was a magnificent player. I never saw McGrory, but I would have said Joe McBride was the best striker I'd seen. Even allowing for, you know, Bobby Lennox later became a phenomenal striker, and Stevie Chalmers was a great Celtic player. But Joe McBride was brilliant. He really was. So when he got injured, it was a blow. But Wallace was a very good replacement. Although he didn't sign him to replace him because the first couple of games they played together.
Right. So you've got the day of the game, but was it the week before that Rangers had played in the Cup Winners' Cup final?
No, they played after us.
Oh, they played after, that's right, they played after. What was the sort of mood like in and around Greater Glasgow then? Because one of the things I thought was interesting was on Saturday, the Herald did a piece. It was an interview with the Lib Dem guy, Min Campbell. But it was about the fact that Min Campbell achieved 10.2 seconds in the 100 metres in May 1967, which a Scottish 100-metre runner wouldn't even run that today, 50 years later. But what was interesting was Stuart Weir, I think it is the Herald's current sports editor. He cannot even bring himself. He starts an article talking about sport in Scotland or Scottish sport in May 1967. He refers to the Vietnam War and hippies because that's relevant to the story. But he then talks about, and in sport, Scotland had beaten England at Wembley and both Glasgow teams were in European finals. He couldn't even, the most momentous day in the history of Scottish football, the most momentous event in the history of Scottish football, and he can't bring himself to mention it. So what was Glasgow like with two teams in European finals? What was the mood like?
Well, I was in Glasgow.
Yeah, but when you came back up for the final...
Well, I was only interested in the Celtic. I remember feeling a pre-song of guilt after we won because there was all this sort of, I thought, pseudo-congratulation, you know, and now we all support Rangers. No, well, bloody not.
But you see, the funny thing, you should say that, because one of my friends, who's a big Rangers fan, and his dad's a big Rangers fan, and to, if I mean, I remember when Celtic got to the Seville final, him telling me that his wife was trying to console him, saying, "Ach, but you know they won't." When they were in the semi final, his wife was consoling him, saying, "Ach, but if they get to the final, you know they'll not win it." And he blew a gasket at the prospect that we would even get to the final, right? So, yeah, but I remember him telling me that actually his dad did want Celtic to win the European Cup. And his dad went to see Celtic play Leeds and wanted Celtic to beat Leeds.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't honestly say that I could do that.
No, I couldn't.
No.
But I just wonder if you were conscious that there was a general... I mean, again, people need to remember at that time, the Glasgow Herald didn't employ Catholics. The Clydesdale Bank didn't employ Catholics. You're in a different Scotland back then.
It was a different type of sports reporting too. I mean, if you actually look at, I was in, we moved into a house once when we were sort of lifting up floorboard, lifting up linoleum, and we found a piece of paper with a report of the final, and it was only a column.
Mm-hmm.
The Daily Record had a big splash, but the Herald had a wee column. You know, Celtic won the European Cup.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, it wasn't a huge thing. Football reporting. It was just an element of the newspaper. Cyril Horn, I think, wrote the report. He was good. Cyril Horn was a very fair guy in terms of the way he reported and Celtic. But no, I didn't want him to win. I wanted him to get beat. So, the next year, when Manchester United won it, mm-hmm. I felt really sorry for City, because City had won the championship for the first time in donkey's years. And up come Manchester United to win the European Cup, steal all their glory.
So, you're up there and you're in your brothers. Was it just the two of you there?
No, his wife was there too, and Lorraine was in there. She was sleeping in her cot. And we watched on the telly. You know, it's curious. You see the pictures now, the black and white pictures, and they look really grainy and stuff. At the time, I didn't think they were that bad, because the early years of Eurovision, it really was like looking through fog.
Mm-hmm.
But by 1967, the pictures weren't as bad as they used to be. They're nothing compared to what you see now.
Well, but then you didn't know any better either, so...
You could see the game. Uh-huh. There were earlier games I remember trying to watch European ties, and it was like looking... You say, "Oh, really foggy there." It wasn't foggy at all. Just the pictures were foggy.
So what were your thoughts when Jim Craig gives away the penalty?
Oh, I mean, it was sickening. You thought, "Oh, God, no," you know. And we didn't know that Inter Milan were a great team. I remember Inter Milan beating Liverpool in the semi-final. I think it was a couple of years earlier. 2 years earlier, Shankly's team.
Mm-hmm.
They really cheated them. In effect, Liverpool had a very good case for suggesting that there was a refereeing conspiracy to stop them winning.
Right.
But it's still a great team. They had great players like Capellini, and Luis Suarez, of course, didn't play. And the argument was that, McBride wasn't playing, Luis Suarez wasn't playing, so they balanced each other out. But in effect, they didn't, because Joe McBride had been out since the Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And Celtic really used to playing without him. But I think Luis Suarez got injured on the run up to the final, if I recall, and literally missed the final. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a difference. I think losing Suarez, who was really a midfield mastermind, had a bigger effect on Inter than losing Joe McBride and Celtic.
Yeah, because as you say, we'd now been playing for 3-4 months and
get used to playing without him. But the game itself, I mean, you've probably seen the game, was Celtic were brilliant. They really, really pummeled them. I remember Johnson had a great header, tipped over the bar, and then they hit the post, they hit the bar. It was like shooting in.
Oh, you watch it over and over again and we're used to it, but when you now look back on the stats of the game and then you see the game again, it is one of the most one-sided European Cup finals ever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think maybe that's where Suarez might have made a difference. I think although they were used to playing a Catenaccio system and drawing teams onto them, they were quite happy to accept pressure. He was the fulcrum of the way they played, and I think they were able to get out whenever it suited them. and hit you on the break. But I can only remember one or two breakaways in the whole game. There was the one where Ronnie Simpson scared the life out of us.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the guy wasn't through a goal or anything. Like, Ronnie Simpson beat him to the ball and got a rather eccentric way of dealing with it. He didn't boot it into the crowd or that. You know, he emulated Craig Gordon.
I was going to say, can you imagine the atmosphere at Celtic Park if Craig Gordon did that today? People be having kittens.
They do. I mean, he didn't do that a lot. Ronnie Simpson was an ultra cautious and safe goalkeeper. I think that's the thing that I remember most about the season was that the players, how the players grew. I mean, I said to you, I think in a recent podcast, that, you know, there are players at Celtic at the moment, I think, who have potential to be great players. And at that time, there were players growing into their prime who 3 or 4 years ago, by fairly common consensus, weren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, they all go about Jinkie or that. When Jock Steen came to Celtic, he was considering letting Jinkie go because he wasn't that impressed by him. He knew he had ability, but I don't think he was impressed by what he saw. Because I think the family he had Alec Edwards. And I've argued with people before that at 17, 18, 19 and 20, Alec Edwards and Willie Henderson were far better players than Jimmy Johnson. More effective players. But Jimmy Johnson left them all behind when he grew in to being the player we know.
Mm-hmm.
But that, before that, they were like wee eruptions, like, you know, when you see these big like volcanic mud areas, you know, and you see a wee explosion of mud.
Mm-hmm.
That was like Jimmy Johnson's career. You know, wee periods of brilliance and then long periods of running up blind alleys.
Yeah.
And it was only when Jock Steen came and got to work with him and the way Brendan Rodgers is doing with some players just now, got to realise how he could contribute more effectively to the team. But also other players growing alongside him, like Bobby Murdoch. I was always a Bobby Murdoch fan.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I kind of knew him. He used to go to the same, although he didn't live in Castlemaine, he lived in Crawford, he used to go to St. Bartholomew, used to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be sitting in the altar, as an altar boy, and you see Bobby Murdoch in the front row sitting, you say, oh, there's Bobby Murdoch, a Celtic player, you know. And occasionally I would, on a Sunday afternoon, go down there for a kickabout and play with his brother. His brother would sometimes play in the kickabout, Billy Murdoch, who later became a footballer too. But I like Bobby Murdoch. I always thought he looked as if he could be a really great player. And of course, everybody knows how Steen moved him back to right half so that he was facing the game more.
Yep.
He became imperious. That's the only word for him. He really was a marvellous footballer. I don't think folk who didn't see him at his prime would realise how great he was. I remember when AC Milan beat them in the quarter final. Was that 2 years later? I think so. The manager hailed it as a miracle that they could beat Celtic at Celtic Park. And he sang the praises of Bobby Murdoch. And I think if it hadn't been for his kind of problems with his health in terms of his, you know, weight problems,
mm-hmm.
he could have gone on to be one of the greatest players ever. But that always kind of held him back from, you know. But he was a magnificent footballer. Bertie Auld came back from England, a great player. He went away, kind of winsome winger, sprightly guy. But when he came back, he was a mature footballer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to guide the likes of Lennox, you know, when to make the runs, and he would provide them with the ball. And these guys all grew as players under Steen's tutelage into a great team. And you could see them in a great team.
But no matter how great a team is, if you're playing another great team and you're 1-0 down and the keeper's making saves and you're hitting the post and you're hitting the bar, it must have been getting, as the game progressed into the second half, that you were starting to get worried.
Yeah, well, of course. You know, you're always looking at your clock when you're getting beat. You know, and the fact that they were playing so well, the fact that they had so many chances, that they were peppering their goal, and, you know, even there were one or two decisions, I remember the one, but I think it was at Lennon, it was a challenge, his leg held by the goalkeeper as he was trying to force the ball over the line. The referee never gave us that. That was as much a penalty as the one they had.
Mm-hmm.
He thought, is it going against us? And then Gable popped up with the equaliser, and from then on, it was never in doubt. They couldn't get out. They were shot. Their legs were gone. It was just brilliant.
So what did you do with the final whistle?
Well, I was just jumped about. Actually, it was an early, it wasn't a late night game. It finished, if I remember, at Rover tea time, right. The game was played. So I went home.
I suppose if you think about it, you know, the iconic images of Billy McNeil holding the European Cup aloft, it's in daylight.
Of course it is, yeah. That was the thing that really bugged me. And it has bugged me. I was actually talking to my wife about it the other day. It bugs me to this day, the pitch invasion.
Mm-hmm.
I had always dreamt through that year. As I said, I really did believe we would win it. I used to... My sister lived, her husband was at college in Manchester too, and they lived in another part of Salford. And I would go there for my dinner on a Friday night. And as I walked through the dark streets of Salford, I would commentate on the games that Celtic were winning. Honestly, it's pathetic.
Like this is a confessional, Lackey.
I've never told anybody this, but I would talk to myself as I went, sorry.
I suppose it keeps people away from you, when you're going through back streets.
Yeah, the streets were absent. It was a very quiet suburb of Manchester. I would always commentate in these games, and they would always win. But at the end, in my mind, there would always be a lap of honour a la Real Madrid. It never happened.
Yeah.
And I remember, do you remember when they won at Lock Street?
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy Burns was going, get off! Remember, he was get off! They kind of got a proper lap of honour because of this. And I understand the enthusiasm. Maybe if I'd been there, the only time I ever went on the park was the night they won the Glasgow Cup. And I think most people were already at the mouth of the tunnel by the time I ventured onto the pitch. So I bet the police of those three would have thrown me off because there's thousands in the pitch. So that was the way they celebrated the Glasgow Cup when one of the men's running around the park. But maybe I would have done it myself if I'd been there, but I remember being very vexed. And I mean, the picture of Billy McNeil with the cup is just fantastic. It's just, he was like a god, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. He was like a Greek god, holding it up.
Absolutely. And the strip was magnificent.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard them talking the other night, one or two of the players that played, talking about how they looked at the Italian strip and what a great strip. And it was a great strip, but it was no greater than their strip.
No, I often think one of Celtic strip is one of the iconic strips of world football.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
The hoops may get slightly thicker and thinner, but intrinsically, we have stayed loyal to the green and white hoops. And that image of McNeil standing on the steps, I think because he's obviously fit as well, so it's a strip that is. Yeah. It's just everything about him. It's just an imperious...
He looked as good as any Italian, Billy McNeil.
Tall, chiselled, 6 foot, holding aloft the European Cup.
It was fantastic. What an image.
So when did you go straight back down the road? Did you manage to get...
No, I went back. I lived in Castlemilk at the time. Jackie lived in the Carlton, my brother. He lived in the Carlton.
Right.
So I had gone in to his... place. My dad was working, I think. So I got into Jackie's place, and then I got the bus back to the Carlton to meet up with my pals. And then, this is true, I'd been to Mass in the morning, but I knew one of my pals had been working and he was going to evening Mass. So I went to St. Bartholomew's to meet him after evening Mass, and Eddie Gray was there.
Right.
Eddie Gray came from Castlemilk, and when he came out, everybody was talking, and this guy went up to him. This is the truth. The guy says to him, "Oh, Eddie, you know, what do you make of it?" And it's always brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. He says, "Oh, Eddie, you've done well. You've done well." He said, "I know, but I wish it was in a Celtic strip." That's the truth. The great Eddie Gray, I wish it was in a Celtic strip. So the next thing was obviously the next day when they came back with the cup. Yeah. We went to Celtic Park that night.
Did you?
And my mother went too, my father, I think we all went. And it was good, there was a family in Rothesay called the Genesis who owned the Bay Cafe, and they owned another cafe just round the corner from that, made fantastic ice cream. It really was fantastic. And they had all these Italian banners, as most Italian cafes do.
Mm-hmm.
All the teams, you know, they were there. They'd come up from Rothesay. And like many Italians, they were tons.
Yeah. So whereabouts were you in Celtic Park that night?
No, I started off in the jungle, in the enclosure, obviously, with my mum and dad. But I knew my pals were up the Celtic Inn. So I went up to the Celtic Inn for my band. I remember being annoyed at the band. I thought it looked too orange for them.
Do you know, I've always thought it looks a bit orange.
I thought, who's daughter that? An orange band. Because it wasn't a Coatbridge band. But I just thought it was slightly odd. And the lorry was a bit tacky as well.
So what time was that the team arrived at Celtic Park?
Well, as you can see from the pictures, it was still sunny when they get back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was getting on into maybe 8 o'clock, half past 8 time. I can't remember exactly. But it was in the evening. It wasn't late at night. It was the early afternoon. There's obviously in the Celtic Story film, you see the bus go through the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go off. And the guy who meets them off the plane, you'll see a guy with a sort of airline hat. He looks like a pilot. He's not a pilot. He's the guy who's shaking. He sat next to me in school.
Right.
And I named his name. As soon as I saw him, I thought, "Oh, I know him."
Yeah. So that night, the celebration, and then the next night, the team comes back. And did you think this was going to be the only time in your life that you were going to see Celtic lift the European Cup, or did you think this was it?
No. They were a tremendous team. And as you know, they went to the final.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, they were in like three or four semi-finals. Beaten by Atletico Madrid by utter cookery.
Yeah.
Terrible, so it was. I always thought the team that played in the lead season was a better team.
Uh-huh.
You know, you had Davy Hay coming in, whom, with all due respect to Jim Craig, Davy Hay was probably a better player than Jim Craig. Jim Brogan was a more than accomplished replacement for John Clark. John Clark was a tremendous player, but Jim Brogan had a slightly more attacking edge to his game. In fact, I've always thought that the fact that he got hurt early on, but he didn't come off, but it affected his ability to stop Van Hanegem and the other midfield players who were having a rare old time of it after Celtic scored. But up until then, I thought they were a better team.
Than George Conley as well.
George Conley, of course, that's right. I actually thought the other day, I think I posted on Twitter about it, that not that I'm overly worried about Saturday coming,
mm-hmm.
but I remember a very good Aberdeen team beating us in the cup final the week before we beat Leeds.
Right.
Now, I thought Celtic were unbeatable, but Aberdeen beat them because a referee took a hand in the proceedings.
Right.
And it was a response to your tweet about beaten, or a comment you made in the webs. Was it on the podcast?
On the podcast about somebody had said, "What's the only thing that's going to stop Celtic's unbeaten run?" And I said, if Madden gets a game.
Madden, yes.
Well, he's got the cup. And then, and that day, it's announced he's got the cup final.
Well, that's it. Well, Bobby Davidson, not particularly pro-Celtic, he gave Aberdeen a penalty, which was exceedingly dubious for a handball that hit Bobby Murdoch up somewhere around the chest.
Right.
And then he disallowed a good goal from Lennox that would have tied it up. And then in the second half, with Celtic chasing the game, Arthur Graham used his speed to great effect. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt the referee was a key player in that game, although Aberdeen were a smashing team. That, as I say, I expect them to win it again. In fact, I went to the Leeds game at Leeds. I went to both.
Yep.
Ties. I went to all the home ties plus the game at Leeds, because I was, by that time I was teaching. And then coming out the ground, there were a Leeds supporter was saying, "Oh, well done, lads, you know." And we were just chatting, saying, "That must have come as a surprise." And I said, "Why would it be a surprise?" He said, "You didn't expect to beat Leeds United." And I says, "We've won this cup. You haven't." Nothing surprises us. So I did expect them to win it again. I'm not sure that they would have won it in the subsequent years. I think Ajax were a better side than them. Had they got through to the finals. But they were cheated.
Well, there was also losing in the on penalties to Inter Milan.
Milan, yeah, that's right. That was another blow to lose that one. First ever penalty kick missed in a penalty shootout. Dixie. Yeah.
So, was that lead that 1970 team then the best Celtic team you ever saw?
Probably. Although, in terms of what it achieved.
Mm-hmm.
The 67 team was the best team in Arsenal because they won everything, and you can't argue with that. They won everything. They were just imperious. That's the word. Invincibles, they were.
Well, they were, although, you know, because that's, although they didn't go unbeaten like the current team, they won every trophy.
Yeah.
So.
But the United were the only team to beat them. They beat them twice. I was at the first game at Tannadice.
Uh-huh.
The second one was a midweek game. I noticed that Anthony was talking about it, and he said that he has no recollection of the game. He doesn't even remember the papers. Maybe we just ignored that. I'm not sure.
So what would be your abiding memory of the year Celtic won the European Cup, footballing wise?
I remember the game at Easter Road more than any other because Hibs were brilliant and Celtic were better. Joe McBride scored 4. In the 5th goal, he hit the crossbar and Stevie put the header in for the rebound.
Uh-huh.
And the game ebbed and flowed. Two wonderful teams attacking each other with tremendous verve. I think it was 4-2 at half-time, finished 5-3. And the place was packed. I mean, every game you went to, the place was packed. You know, that was the thing, that every game was a sellout, more or less.
And when you went back down to Manchester?
I gloated.
I was going to say, you talked earlier about the difficulty of getting results down there and the lack of mass coverage. When you went down there, were you almost having to explain to people what Celtic had achieved?
They'd all watched it.
Uh-huh.
You know, the guys that I knew who played football and stuff, they'd all watched it. And they patronised me while I wasn't having it.
Oh, do you know, I always think there's a bit of a tone amongst Manchester. There's an irritation at Manchester United that Celtic beat them by a year to the European Cup. And a tone of, well, if the Busby Bays hadn't crashed, we'd have won it before you.
Awesome. Thing.
I
mean, it was the stuff that dreams are made of. It really was. I mean, Manchester United had a tremendous team, and Rangers played the European Cup many times before Celtic even got in it, because uh-huh. you had to win the league. and we hadn't won the league since 1954.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't something that entered your thinking, the European Cup, other than being an interested spectator and watching these great European teams play, like Benfica and Barcelona and Real Madrid and Rams and teams like that, you know. But you didn't really expect Celtic to play in the European Cup. So that was the beauty of winning the championship that first year. You knew you were in the European Cup. It's interesting. There was a discussion once, I don't remember if it was in Scotsport, but it was certainly in one of the papers. There was a guy called Malky Monroe, mm-hmm. used to write for the Evening Times when it was a proper newspaper.
Right.
And Malky got engaged in an argument. Perhaps we are at Karma or something. And he said that Celtic would win the European Cup before Rangers did. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Celtic never played in the European Cup. But he said this. He said that was a more liable thing to happen than Rangers ever winning it. Because they would get pumped every year, man. Sometimes we tell you, at the Mass on Sunday, Saturday, the Archbishop was talking about how when they lose, he bleeds, you know, and how when they win, he's the same as us. He's a Celtic supporter. And he talked about watching the game in the junior seminary up at St. Mary's. They were allowed to watch the game. And someone asked him, was he at all conflicted? Because Inter Milan were playing.
Yep.
He's obviously an Italian. And he said, Scots-Italian. And he says, why would I be conflicted? I'm a Celtic supporter. It never occurred to me to be conflicted. Why would I support Internazionale? Mm-hmm. He says, my father came from Italy and he wasn't conflicted. He was a Celtic supporter. You know, it never crossed my mind, he says, that I would want Inter Milan to win. You want to see how when he just became Archbishop of Glasgow, he was at the Juventus game the night they lost 3-0. Mm-hmm. And as the way he put it, we were pumped 3-0, he says. I doubt if that phrase has ever been used in a season before or will ever be again. But he says he actually turned round. Remember at halftime it was 1-0 and they were pulling Hooper around and fouling him, remember?
Yeah.
He says he turned down to the Italian delegation behind them and he spoke to them in Italian. And what he said was, I see you brought your own referee with you. He was actually, he gave a great sermon at the weekend.
So the final question I've got for you before we finish is, so in the last 50 years, Celtic have won one European Cup, got to lost in one final of the European Cup and lost in one final of the UEFA Cup. In the next 50 years, do you see Celtic getting to a European final?
I don't know. I didn't. When Martin came in, I don't think getting to a European final was on our radar because we had some pretty miserable times apart from one or two cups in a league championship, mm-hmm. you know. And he raised the bar again. If I'm being honest, this may sound terrible to say this. I've thought about it for years. Much as I love what they're doing just now to celebrate this great victory, and it should be celebrated, there was a time when I prayed that we would win another one, that we didn't always have to hark back to 67, that we would have new heroes. Do you know what I mean by that?
I know exactly what you mean. I am. I don't mind having the odd conversation about the past, mm-hmm. but I'm really not one for wallowing in the past. Tomorrow's a brilliant day because tomorrow's going to bring you something you've never experienced before. That's my attitude in life. Tomorrow something brilliant will happen, and it'd be nothing better for me. As you, same as you, if we have another set of heroes mm-hmm. who are around today mm-hmm. and not two generations in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope they win at the weekend. because that, in a sense, was a unique season that we can hold on to, same way as we hold on to Martin's first season. In some ways, the Seville season was even better than that, and yet they won nothing.
Yeah.
But they were wonderful. You know, what they did that year was, I mean, folk have gone on about it up the Prairie, but the fact that it was the Glasgow District 11 and stuff like that. And it was unique. It'll never be repeated. That I think that's what makes it special, that they were all local boys. You know, even then, you know, Suarez wasn't an Italian. There were other players who had been bought in at great expense. Basically, they were quite a cheap side. And it was all down to a sort of fusion of emerging talent and a great manager. Although I find it quite distressing now that a lot of them go out their way to rubbish the manager because of things that happened later on.
Yeah.
No, but they had that day of glory because of the manager. And we loved the manager. I mean, all that meant we got at the back, you know, all the stuff we're dealing with players and selling them and cold shouldering other ones and stuff like that. But there's no doubt he was a great manager.
But there's different times and different, you know, 10, 15 years later, Jim McLean achieved stuff with Dundee United.
Yes.
Behaving in a way that you wouldn't manage people today. It's just different.
Ferguson did too.
Yeah.
I mean, Ferguson, you listen to his players talking about him. He was a mental case. But a brilliant, brilliant manager. But I think he kind of matured. You know, I always thought that his later team, if they'd kept them together, the Quality Street team, I thought he loved them more than he loved the Lisbon Lions. That sounds odd, but it was almost as if he produced them.
Well, I know what you mean, because you can see that with Manchester United. Alex Ferguson won stuff with a team that he brought in. But you get the impression Alex Ferguson, to use the same analogy, Alex Ferguson loved Beckham and Scholes and Butt and Giggs and the Nevilles because they were his boys that came through.
Yeah. And in a sense, they managed them differently.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a different way of working altogether.
Well, final...
You'll never see the like again, that's for sure, because they were, people don't realise what good players they were.
One final thing to bring us forward then to now. We have a chance on Saturday to have gone a whole domestic season unbeaten and win a treble. So what's your prediction for the score?
If Celtic turn up, I think they'll win comfortably. I think they'll probably win 3-0.
Okay, with that, Lachie Moore, I will say thanks and good night.
Thank you very much, Harry. Good night.
A Clark to Murdoch. In comes Green. Kimberley scored a great goal! He's done it! Kimmel, a great goal! 17 minutes of the second half gone. Could be the goal that wins it for Celtic, because Inter now have to come out. Well, Tommy Gimmel has done this time and time again. But the way Celtic are playing, there's going to be no extra time. Oh! Oh! 5 minutes left now. One goal each. Gimmel. Murdoch. It's there! Celtic has scored! Put it in, but it doesn't matter. And Murdoch got it as a killed gentleman on the pitch. Only 5 minutes to go, and without a doubt, the European Cup is on its way to Glasgow. Amy Chalmers put it.
you enjoyed that podcast. We will have a Cup Final podcast preview also, with exclusive audio from some Celtic players, along with Hull Boy. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight, God bless, and God bless the Lisbon Lions. But I don't need no friend. As long as I gaze on Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise. Every day I look at the world from my window. Chilly, chilly. As long as they gaze on Waterloo sunset, they are